Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I am hopping mad, and I want something in the middle.
Aha!
Absolutely, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dad!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical, awesome, mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes, 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 and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
They said, who the hell is that?
Well, this is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello friends, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we take a forensic look at all of the output of Alan Gordon Partridge, one episode, page, or movie at a time. Right now we are in the thick of it, halfway through, or more than halfway through, from the Oast House, Alan's own podcast, Series 3. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Michael was a bit of a drifter who drifted into my life and then eventually out to sea.
Nick Alder.
Full disclosure, in the mid-80s, I wolf-whistled at a man I mistook for a woman.
And Tom Stab.
Stop trying to serve me eggs!
So thanks again for joining us. We will be talking today about episodes 7 and 8 of from the Oast House Series 3, namely New Grandkid and New Friend, respectively. But first, we've been taking a look at the top of each episode at some of the promo around From the Oast House, and this week it's the turn of the radio ad. Tom Dark, tell us more.
So this is an advert that was used on the radio and on podcasts as well. I mean, I definitely heard this pop up in an episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Handily on YouTube labelled as the Alan Partridge Oast House inclusivity song. Let's just give it a listen.
From the Oast House,
whoever you are,
there's a welcome there for Ruth and Faye, Mohammed and Jose.
From the Oast House, whether at work, rest or play, listen to my podcast. It's packed full of meaty goodness.
From the Oast House,
with Alan Partridge,
there's a welcome there for straight and gay and he and she and they. From the Oast House.
From the Oast House, the Alan Partridge podcast, Series 3.
Yeah, full of meaty goodness.
I don't know how subtle it is, but I like that they coupled meaty goodness with work, rest and play, which for people of a certain age is Mars chocolate bar slogan. So you've got conjure up the image of Mars and then immediately scupper it with the thought of being packed full of meaty goodness.
I mean, it's obviously, it sounds like a kind of 80s or kind of 90s, a jingle of yesteryear. Yeah. I also assume that the VO, which is a young sounding woman, I also think that has been done to very much almost go against what's been said previously, where that isn't his demographic, that isn't his audience, yet you've got this young woman VOing this product for 45-year-old middle-aged men.
Yeah, I guess it's done very much, it's true to the style of essentially a radio jingle, a radio advert that you would normally hear, like that kind of younger female voiceover, the upbeat style, the kind of upbeat, kind of jangly music, but yeah, which doesn't, none of it really fits the podcast, which obviously is inherently the joke. And I think, you know, he's very well written in terms of it's Alan trying to be inclusive and kind of get that message across. But again, what's that got to do with the podcast? That doesn't actually sell what the podcast is about. I just think, you know, that's what I like about these things, where they've clearly put the effort and time into writing things like the adverts or like the press releases that go out around these series. So like we talked about previously, they become extra bits of content that you don't want to miss out on. It really, really kind of enriches the whole experience, doesn't it?
And so on to episode 7, entitled New Grandkid, clocking in at 24 minutes 47. What did Audible have to say about New Grandkid?
The official episode synopsis for this one is, Alan awaits the birth of a new grandchild. Lynn thinks she's made a breakthrough in her search for a friend from Alan's past. I wonder who that could be.
So thank God we're back on the case of chasing Michael down. Episode opens with Alan singing, I believe, a smash hit Filipino lullaby. This is lazy of me, but I've just put my notes. Wouldn't be surprised if there's a joke in the missung lyrics here.
Well, the lullaby is called Dan San Soy.
Dan Dan Soy. Just...
Dan Dan Soy.
Oh, right. A typo on my part.
I mean, my bit of research into that was that it's a folk song that is also sung as a lullaby.
Yeah.
So it is a real thing. It does exist. But yes, whether the translation is correct, not sure. Did try running the older Google Translate trick, but nothing so conclusive came up.
We've done our due diligence.
We've tried.
He describes the pod as more imperial leather soak than Dettol sheep dip. Although we know that Alan's deep bath has been sponsored by Dettol in the past. And it does feel like he only really has imperial leather and Dettol as his two go-to brands when it comes to talking about baths and bath-related metaphors.
Possibly genuine sponsorships for the writing team there.
Yes. Both brands are still just about going by the skin of their teeth. And my next note just says, oh God, he's discovered ASMR.
So, Adam, are you saying that perhaps Alan doing ASMR hasn't given you a warm feeling in your scalp, neck, or groin?
No, but it has made me want to take a Dettol sheep dip.
So, he's been making some recordings, including saying the word chocolate over and over, and eating a bag of Quavers with no drink. So, a very, very dry, experience.
I did enjoy the delivery on that. It was bag of Quavers, one sitting, no drink.
Is anyone a fan of ASMR? I personally haven't spent any time with it, but I couldn't believe the amount that was on Spotify, and I could not believe the varying levels of quality of some of the output that is on Spotify. It is frankly astonishing.
Yeah, I've never really looked into it, researched it, but I mean, my thing was always... I remember having a bit of a discussion about whether like Billie Eilish was in essence like an ASMR pop star, kind of in terms of like how her vocals are delivered. And for me, it never did anything for me. So I think I'm probably out. It feels like it's something for the kids, the young kids.
I don't think necessarily it is, because I mean, Billie Eilish is definitely but I mean, just ASMR, I don't think is, because it's a genuine sort of physical reaction that your body has, so it doesn't really affect me very much, because I sometimes do, when I'm scrolling through social media, get served ASMR content, and it tends to be, the more stuff that I get now is like, it's very, very close up, it's like people with their like nails on the microphones and things like that, and just like popping like sheets of what are they called?
Bubble wrap.
Like that sort of thing.
I mean, everyone loves popping bubble wrap.
I think for some people it has like... Right. I think some people do have like an actual physical reaction to that kind of thing, and it can help them relax and things like that. But it's not ASMR, but I do listen to sort of like rain and storm playlists on Spotify to go to sleep. They're quite nice.
But would you listen to Alan's list of Greek surnames and sex noises? That was his his next ASMR idea.
It also included was long yawn, loud swallow, dental hygienist saliva suction. That is for people that sleep in the nude. Library shushing, aboriginal groaning drone, and yes, the Greek surnames Papadopoulos and Nikolopopolo. I think I might have written that one down wrong. And sex noises, of course.
Yep.
I wonder as well, because I don't think I know enough about ASMR to know whether there is a joke in here in terms of technically the things he's listing there. Do some of them count as ASMR and some of them don't as well? Like, I don't know what the defining factor of ASMR, but I feel like Greek surnames, like there's quite a percussive nature to those kind of like multi-syllabic words, but I don't think that's ASMR, is it?
Yeah, it could just be he's just straight into just saying things.
Just saying things,
yeah.
There's a rerun of an old joke from the last series about starting the episode of a podcast with a bit from the middle so that in Audible's words, the content becomes sticky. In this case, he's sitting on a plastic chair in a cafe. Why? And I love that that's presented as if it's a given that that's unusual, that he'd be sitting on a chair in a cafe.
I mean, he literally repeats within kind of like a minute the whole idea about the repetition. So he basically explains what Audible have said. Don't start at the beginning, everybody does that. Then you've got him saying he's sitting on a plastic chair in a cafe. And then again, he says, Audible want me to start with something in the middle and explain it later. So he literally repeats that within about a minute of each other.
Followed by him saying, I don't really have to digress, by then talking about Thunderbirds and Super Mario Nation for ages. So I guess we're then on to the main feature of this episode, which is that he's expecting another grandchild. A nice bit of backstory in terms of his kids and his relationship with them. Fernando and his partner India are responsible for all of the Partridge grandchildren. Denise lives in Hebden Bridge, and yeah, she's gone in a different direction. I hesitate to say lesbian because labels are limiting. I've got a note that says that sounds very much like something he's been taught to say that way. I also wonder, this might be one that listeners can help us with, what are we supposed to surmise something specific from her living in Hebden Bridge? Does it have a reputation amongst Yorkshire residents, or is it just the sort of place Alan thinks is subversive but is actually basically normal, like when people go to Camden?
Did we not discuss this before? I think
we've covered this
kind
before.
Of like famously a kind of like a lesbian friendly town, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's just a sort of a progressive town in a kind of a Brighton, a Margate. It's that, but in Yorkshire, I believe. Although I haven't been.
So yeah, he says Guardian journalists and Denise both say that labels are limiting, and he does agree with them because, well, it's just easier that way.
just quickly, just looking on Wikipedia, it says Hebden Bridge is known as the lesbian capital of the UK.
Oh, there we go. Every day is a school day.
Oh, there's actually a reference on the Wikipedia page to from the Oast House.
Oh, that might be worth calling out.
Live research. Well, it says in 2020, Steve Coogan's From the Oast House podcast featured his character Alan Partridge, stating that his daughter Denise lived in Hebden Bridge, which Partridge says explains her reluctance to have children.
So should we cover the setup here as well in terms of what's actually going on with Alan, what he's actually trying to achieve? This is essentially him trying to get one over on Carol, right? That's the kind of main through line of this that we know from previous episodes and previous series that Nanny Carol has been much closer to the children, although obviously in was it series one or series two, I think, where Alan first met Jack and Ruby, but this time he's keen to
puppy's here
he's keen to get ahead of Carol, and so is staking out Norwich's four hospitals with the help of Lynn and Rosa.
I like the running gag here that starts around this point where effectively he's blaming Carol for sort of, you know, running in, smothering the grandkids, keeping him at bay, when it's very apparent to us as the listener that it's a Fernando decision that, you know, at any point he could, like, I mean, the reveal slightly later on that they have refused to tell him where the child's going to be born. You know, I just, yeah. I love that it's kind of like, you know, he can't fathom that Fernando's not interested. It's just that it must be Carol.
Is there an argument to say that when Alan talks about him first meeting Fernando's wife, India, that India is a bit of a dick to him? Or is this like a unreliable narrator? She's heard terrible things about Alan. He basically says like, oh, isn't it funny how people from India are never called India? And also that...
enjoyed that, by the way.
Like, if your name is India, you would at least have an understanding of India as a country, because he has a friend called Chester who lives in...
Dover.
He lives in Dover, but he would know that Chester is a, I don't know, like an old Roman town.
Yeah, he starts to tie himself up, doesn't he?
But then also he reveals that that's a lie as well.
But it is a good point.
But her responses to him, the way he tells it, actually sound quite rude. So I was wondering, actually, is India just being a bit of a dick to him for the sake of it? Or is it just, one, unreliable narrator, or two, she's heard so many horror stories from Fernando?
Well, I think his immediate, like, shot from the bow about her name is probably going to put you not in the best light to kick things off, especially if you haven't really had a relationship with your son for the past 30 plus years. So I think I'm prepared to give India the benefit of the doubt.
Also, question to the group. Is Alan a bad dad?
Yes. I think he's 100%.
Or is he just an idiot? Is he a bad father? Or
I think
is he just
is.
A bit of an idiot?
No, I think he's a bad dad. I also like, he references, obviously, kind of the hospitals, and Lynn and Rosa are covering their respective hospitals, even though Rosa can't drive but can move quickly. I don't quite know what that means.
I think, just go back to the bad dad thing, I think arguably he's a bad dad, but it's because he's oblivious as to what makes a good dad, rather than him being like deliberately neglectful or judgmental. Have we talked about what makes up Operation GD3, Granddaughter 3? It's how Dan Snow helped him devise it, and effectively it has, it's Lynn's parked next to a crematorium, and between two other hospitals. Rosa sitting between two hospitals, and it's all happening. He's just off the A148 in Fakenham, equidistant between two hospitals.
Yeah,
so
this is all about he wants to be the first to get the greetings card and teddy bear to the baby. So this is all, like Nick was saying, it's all about him getting one over on Carol, basically. And I think it's a good reintroduction in terms of the relationship with Carol, in terms of it's obviously still not in a good place. He says, even more joyous will be the aghast expression on my ex-wife's face when she realises I've beaten her to it. It's delicious. So it's more about getting one over on Carol than actually meeting his new grandchild, which I think is the crucial point here.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Alan, Lynn and Rosa are stationed at different places, equidistant between hospitals, like the three wise men following the star. Although Alan says these days you probably can't have three wise men. It would have to be three wise women. Good luck with that. Nah, only mucking about.
And he also says, he elaborates on that to say, it's one wise man, Lynn's quite wise, and Rosa is a cleaner.
But I was quite impressed with him saying Lynn is quite wise. That is just like, that's not even a backhanded compliment from him, which is quite surprising.
Yeah, he definitely softened towards Lynn. I think, you know, that they're not on an even keel, but they're closer to an even keel. He'll tolerate some back chat now as well. But, you know, as we've seen in past episodes and future episodes, he does still feel the need to motivate her to maintain her quality as a worker. Enjoyed that he's bulk bought teddy bears and has them at each location to maximise the chance, but also goes to quite a dark place quite quickly when he talks about any of the unused teddy bears can be donated to a police station to be used as visual aids, e.g. show me where the perpetrator grabbed you. Yeah, bad stuff.
Talking to teddy bears as well, he does also say that he had considered hiding in a giant teddy bear, which has put me in mind of the giant beef-eater bears in I'm Alan Partridge.
It's got bean juice on it. I've got this note that maybe you guys can fill in the blanks around, but it just says Carol seems to have long arms. Anyone have the point around Carol's long arms?
Oh, yeah. He stresses they're not weird like Mr. Tickle or Richard Osman, which I thought was a nice reference.
He makes a joke that the long arm of the Carol instead of the long arm of the law.
Yeah, and Carol's got slightly long arms in the same way that Matthew McConaughey's got slightly short arms, and that Matthew McConaughey would be jealous of people who are able to put their hands in their pockets.
Yeah. Is this a known thing? Is Matthew McConaughey known for having shorter arms?
I googled I couldn't find anything. I was just like, spent like way too long than I should have looking at pictures of Matthew McConaughey.
He also suggests that Carol should take up darts because she could stand behind the line and just push the darts into the board, which I thought was fun.
I missed that. Great.
He wraps up this whole sort of Carol getting there first thing as saying, without her grandchildren, there's sort of no point to her, and so she's weaponized them.
Yeah, and he kind of goes on to say that she would put them in a cannon and fire them at Alan, although Ruby would quite like that, but Jack less so because he is more sensitive.
I've got a real overstretch here in terms of a theory. There's a bit of doorstep sparring with Carol, and it emerges that, according to Alan, she likes cheap seafood restaurants. Now, we know Alan has a shellfish allergy. I wondered, did they in fact go to a perfectly reputable seafood restaurant together? He puffed up like a fish, and ever since has branded the restaurant and Carol, by extension, cheap and unhygienic.
Great.
Very good.
Yeah.
I like it.
I also like that. Even though it's obviously coming from Alan and it's, you know, hypothetical, made up, I do like that there's an interaction between Alan and Carol. We haven't really had very many interactions written about, described between Alan and Carol. And I think that's actually something that is missing a little bit, because I think this whole bit about like them sort of sparring on the front, on the doorstep, was really fun, and I would quite like to hear some more about their sparring.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't get a lot of interplay between them, do you? Even in the even back when the divorce was fresh.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we've talked quite a lot about things that we do like about this episode. One thing I really don't like, I'm not keen on, is the running joke about him being overheard in the cafe and the lady thinking that he's trying to order eggs. I think it's really silly. I think it's a real stretch, and it kind of takes me out of the rest of the episode a little bit. Scramble.
I would agree with you with that. It's just kind of, it just doesn't really work in terms of that's just, you know, you've got, he's sitting on a plastic chair in a cafe talking into a microphone. Why would the waitress think he's trying to order? I agree. I think that just felt a bit jarring compared to everything else. I mean,
also, has anyone ever had a waitress that attentive and a greasy spoon? Like, I certainly haven't.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you have to go up to the counter to order in a place like that as well. So it just, I thought that was a bit weird.
There's a nice bit where, I guess we've had quite a few examples in the APU before of the writers doing a joke that's perhaps a bit obvious, but then taking it a layer beyond. I really like this one where Alan messages, "Are you in situ?" to Rosa. To Rosa replies, "No, I've eaten." And then he realises, he goes, "Oh, she thinks I mean itsu." And then he goes, "Oh, I did write that."
It's weird, isn't it? Stuff like that on paper shouldn't be that funny, but even just retelling it now, like, that's a really fun bit of script.
Well, you must be happy now, Adam, because we're back onto the subject of Michael.
In the words of Franz Ferdinand, "Come and dance with me, Michael."
So Lynn obviously is thinking that he is still alive, and it comes back to...
And Moira.
And Moira, of course, yeah, sorry, mustn't forget Moira, her detective partner.
Like an amateur Cagney and Lacey.
Or Egg and Onion.
And she is convinced that she's seen Michael and has footage of Michael going into the lockup that they share 4 days after he died. I do like that Lynn has gone, she's now gone full detective, pestering local people online, scouring the internet for events that took place around the date, and she's been poring over CCTV footage taken from a pub near the storage facility, she says, that shows Michael entering the building. She's gone full detective, and I would absolutely watch a spin-off.
Yeah.
An aside about Lynn as well is that we learn that Lynn considers her two cats to be her family in this episode. Alan himself doesn't agree. He says cats are not family. They're just lodgers who pay their rent in the form of dead mice and birds.
It's obviously nice to have Michael back, but we've got another familiar name in the form of Daryl Flench, who's referenced here. Daryl Flench, the sunbed tycoon and COVID conspiracy theorist. to which Alan has to say to Daryl, you've got psychological problems and you're just too brown. Daryl replies, okay, I'll speak to a psychiatrist, but I'm not too brown. That is a hill he will die on, the sunbed hill. I thought it was quite a stretch as well that Alan describes himself as a father of four. He's including Angela's kids in the title there, even though they both separated and were fathered by another man.
And they separated years ago.
Yeah, and you can understand why when he describes his Stasi/Mafia technique of punishing the child's brother rather than the child himself, so that when he's upset, it'll be your fault. And he says that technique came from the Stasi and the Mafia, but can be softened and adapted for the home.
Yeah, I love that. Do that again. I won't punish you. I'll punish your brother. Love that. He has referenced before as well that he's been particularly harsh on Angela's children. I think they've definitely bore the harder side of Alan's fathering personality. And I think revisiting that question of, is Alan a bad dad? He was certainly bad to... is it Kobe?
Yeah.
And
Kobe. Colby.
Colby, you're right. It was Colby.
Yeah. His dad's in the Cotswolds.
He's in the Cotswolds.
I think the interesting thing about Alan being a bad dad is that, well, Carol's the one that had an affair. So
correct.
He wasn't adulterous. But at what age were the children? I mean, this is probably is all covered in one of the books, and we probably talked about it in an episode years ago. But what age were the children when the marriage broke down? Because I feel like actually, apart from knowing that Fernando and Denise think Alan's a bit of an idiot and
only we
really,
had a reference, yeah. Something to reference. Well, just
like,
held
you know,
up a copy
we,
of iPod.
We know that like they often don't text him back, they don't communicate with him, they're reluctant to interact with him generally. But I feel like, and Stab will correct me as he rifles through iPartridge, we don't actually get much insight into his actual parenting techniques with his own children, from what I can remember.
No, not at all.
No, I think you're right. So a white van pulls up and a figure gets out that Alan recognises as having Michael's gait, which he likens to a camp Komodo dragon. I like the idea of a Komodo dragon being in any way camp, given it is a vicious, vicious killer that I would personally not want to meet.
just quickly, just to go back on iPartridge, I don't know if this is deliberate, but if it's a little insider gag, I hope we're the only ones who have spotted it. If you go to the index, there is no mention of Denise or Fernando in the index, and it's just been like Alan, as an oversight, has forgotten to include them in the index. But they're
right.
Not. What a great dad! Just a great dad. Maybe that's just an oversight, but then also it would be quite funny if Alan had forgotten to include him in his own book.
I don't think that would be an oversight. I reckon that's one of the many, many layered jokes.
So this bit around the CCTV footage, clearly Alan starts to lose track of the fact that he's got an audio podcast running here, and it all gets very sort of visual. My notes say that this bit has us by the jaffers, but it is largely laugh-free. I think there's bombshell after bombshell around, you know, the emergence of Michael, but I don't know that there's a huge amount of laughs around this point as the baby is born. But he's decided to cancel the mission, no longer interested in being first at the grandchild's side. Operation GD3 is in tatters because he thinks that he might have Michael. Do we think that Alan thinks Michael is alive, or do we think this is just Alan spotting an opportunity to pivot into true crime podcasting?
Well, I think he can. I think he brings himself round. You kind of see or hear at the beginning that he doesn't quite believe it, but actually, the more and more he watches it, he kind of convinces himself. So, I don't know that it's so much that, but I think his hesitancy it kind of comes round, and by the end of the episode, obviously, he's not bothered about the fact that he has a new grandchild. He's focused on the fact that Michael could be back in his life. Which again, further evidence on the is he a good dad pile, I would say.
I think it's fair to say he does bring himself around to this, because initially he's quite dismissive of Lynn wanting him to watch this footage. You know, he's saying the way Lynn is talking, it thinks it makes her sound military, adding all these bloody zeros, and a nice little aside about her watching Zero Dark Thirty 5 times, which I thought was quite funny, and about how much she loved it when they killed Bin Laden, one of her favourite things. And yeah, like when he starts off watching the footage, he's going, "It's just a man," but then you have this thing about him saying it's his gate. I enjoyed the reason why Michael walks with a slight limp, that he, better man, he could kick over a bollard and broke his foot. You can definitely picture that being a thing that Michael would do.
Yeah, that sounds immensely painful as well.
And so I think that brings us to this bombshell-packed, but perhaps arguably slightly light on laughs episode of From the Oast House.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And straight on to episode 8, New Friend, which clocks in at 20 minutes 58 seconds. Tom, what's Audible saying about this one?
Men of a certain age find it hard to make new friends, but Alan has no such problems with a Syrian in a taxi.
I love that they're calling out the Syrian in a taxi when actually that is not really part of the story, and that is a tiny section right at the end. No mention of Adam.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I think, you know, that was kind of one of my concluding notes about this is obviously I think particularly when you look at the episode listing and you see that, you know, bearing in mind what's happened at the end of the episode before, New Friend is like, oh, is this going to be in some way, is that a reference to Michael or something like that? So you've got that, and then you've got the fact the majority of this episode being about his friend Adam. But yeah, then the entire episode is dedicated to a taxi driver that he basically met once.
I think,
yeah.
To address the elephant in the room in this episode, I think we're going to have to take a tip out of the Keith Chegwin episode of Extras and make it very clear when we're referring to Adam me or Adam the character.
Friend Adam.
That's right. It opened Adam me or Adam the character. It opens with some kind of role play. Alan saying, "Don't tell me you're gay. You're my husband." My initial guess was that he'd made some sort of friend through Partridge Playhouse, and this was to do with a new production. But no, goes on to say, "Don't you dare do this, you selfish gay bastard."
How many men have you been with, Adam? But do I mean you or do I mean the character? We don't know.
So Alan is role-playing the wife, Helen. So what Helen may say at the point at which Adam, the character in the episode, decides to come out to his wife. Is Alan doing a good performance or not? Personally, I'm not sure this is helping him in any way.
No,
also, why would you ask Alan Partridge to role play your wife?
It's fine though, Nick. He knows he's not a good actor. He's just solid.
Yeah. We should come on to the review, but I did also want to quickly make mention of the role playing that he also did in This Time, which I think stands as some of the finest and funniest moments in this time.
What the hey, baby girl?
Come on, baby girl. Spells good. Didn't mean the dinner.
Let's talk about the review of Alan in Guys and Dolls. He skips over the majority of the review.
Yeah.
It's 10 out of 10 for effort, but essentially if you connect the dots with everything that's being left out, you can piece together that actually it was an incredibly damning review. But
to give that that quote, it's full sentence. Despite all of that, you have to give him 10 out of 10 for effort.
Yeah, it's performed in a loud, booming voice, more than made up for with sheer enthusiasm. he was solid, if blah, blah, blah. All in all, a nice enough way to pass an evening. It's, yeah,
There's something uniquely hilarious about the thought of an adult Alan Partridge obliviously going for it in this performance, like completely unaware that he's massively overdoing it, giving it the full Brian Blessed.
I enjoyed that the poster for this show hangs up proudly in his bathroom, along with a picture of him with Sue Barker with his arm around her waist, which I thought was an interesting line to kind of call out, as well as an apology from Harry Ramsden's fish bar for a time that he found hair in his fish, although he does go on to say that sometimes fish do have hair. Do they?
The waitress says that sometimes the fish will have hair or does have hair.
Yeah, thankfully I researched that. Do fish have hair? No, but the hairy frogfish is a type of fish that's covered in spines. These spines, which resemble strands of hair, allow the marine animal to camouflage itself against coral and seaweed.
I wonder if they
sea quaddy.
Wonder if they serve that in Harry Ramsden's day.
You wouldn't like that, would you? Do you think that would want to nibble you, Nick? You'd see you as a bacon sandwich.
I wouldn't touch it, especially. It sounds like a stonefish, which has the
big mouth,
dorsal fin,
a
big mouth, and can live above the water for 24 hours, which is my scary fact of the day for fish.
Long enough to get an Uber to your house via B&Q.
It can live above, right? So you think like it might be like coming for you?
No, it will. It is.
It
basically, when the tide goes down and the stonefish is exposed, it can live on land for 24 hours. It can't move.
I love the idea. It's like, oh, it can live for 24 hours. Like, it pops to the shops, it goes and sees a film. Like,
it watches Guys and Dolls.
Yeah. It buys a silencer. It rents the Airbnb opposite Nick's house.
It's an evolution of quaddy, isn't it? The reference to the review being framed in the downstairs loo, I haven't double checked this, but I think, do you remember that in Steve Coogan's autobiography, he wrote about them receiving a letter of complaint at Radio 4 because somebody thought Know Me Knowing You on the radio was a real radio show, and I'm pretty sure he said that was framed in his downstairs toilet.
You're right. Yeah, it was a complaint about Alan assaulting a child on the show.
That was when it. Yes.
Hit
Simon. Yeah.
And they wrote it. It was addressed, I think, to the commissioning editor of BBC Radio.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think he does say that it's framed in his downstairs toilet.
So Lynn interrupts this role play to try and do conversion therapy on Adam. Classic Lynn.
Stop going on about conversion therapy, Lynn.
Yeah. Alan keen to defend against conversion therapy. He's definitely gay. And then goes on to press Adam to say, you are definitely gay, aren't you?
You also have a bit of an old school Alan trait of him being a little bit kind of, I think maybe we've called this homo curious before, when he's saying, what is it you do with these men? I have a right to know. Really, is it quite common then?
Yeah, he's like, all of a sudden he switches and like genuinely, really? Is that quite common?
Yeah.
I do also like that Alan describes it as a late onset homosexuality.
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to go back and it's not worth going back for.
I also thought this has got some parallels with the bit where he sort of accidentally outs Domingo from Little Oakley on the radio. He's now on a podcast talking about his friend Adam, who is married to Helen, who's a Catholic, according to Lynn, and later we're told they're introduced by Gorsandi. I mean, that's got to narrow it down enough that most people would figure out who it is that actually know Adam, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely outed. Alan is keen to kind of, I guess, defend his heterosexuality by saying that one of his ex-girlfriends described him as one of the straightest men she'd ever met, and she'd kissed David Gandy. Obviously, what the implication there being that, that David Gandy's kind of sexuality is arguably anything but heterosexual.
And then we get the bit about Alan once wolf whistling a man in the 80s that he mistook for a woman. That's the last time he's made a mistake like that. And he had to run away and hide in John Menzies.
I love the idea that you would hide in John Menzies. And like that you would need to run away. But it's just a kind of a classic kind of Alan trope, isn't it? When things kind of get into a situation, when he's not comfortable in a situation, hiding is something that kind of comes up time and time again, and hiding in places that are over the top and ridiculous, be it the footwell of a car or John Menzies when you've wolf whistled at them by mistake.
There's a nice little bit about hunting. I always like it when Alan gets into the topic of hunting. So he's volunteered for the Norfolk Hunt. I wonder if it's been named that way deliberately to make it sound as much like you're saying cunt as possible. And there's a new twist on his mangling of words as he starts missing out beagle and bagel fun and ends up correcting the correct version incorrectly.
Yes, it's very rare for him to actually acknowledge that he's made a word mistake, isn't it?
It is. And a couple of my favourite bits of this, where he refers to the fact that KFC will mince the lot when it comes to animals. And the bit where he's doing role-playing as Gavin, who's moved to the country and would like to contribute to the rural economy by killing things in the air and on the ground.
Yeah. The Countryside Alliance is very much open to new members, but you do need to have a Range Rover.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously quite a few digs at the Countryside Alliance here, which I feel is going to be an Alan yes, Coogan no type approach, saying that the Countryside Alliance happily welcome new people who get lucky, move to the country, buy a Range Rover, shotgun and a cap.
There's a fun bit where he says he doesn't like to say gaydar, leading us to believe it's because you know, he thinks it's an outdated phrase or it's not appropriate, but he prefers to say radar for gay people. So it's not so much the term's meaning he has a problem with, he just doesn't like the abbreviation.
Doesn't he then call it the wind chimes of monosex?
He tries to compare his own secrets to Adam's as well, doesn't he? Namely that his great-great-aunt was a madam in Taunton servicing soldiers in nearby barracks. And this is apparently the secret that makes him approachable to closeted gay men.
Yeah, she ran a prostitute farm, as Alan calls it.
Yeah, there's some great language here. A strumpet supervisor, yeah. I also really
kind
of enjoyed.
Yeah, I've got that as well.
And marshmallow-breasted fallen women as well. But I still got this bit strange, this section, kind of Alan being, you know, somewhat ashamed. I mean, obviously the joke is like he's ashamed of it when actually, hit by his own admission, it's his great-great-great-aunt. So in no way would you describe this as close family or anything that he could actually be affected by, because it happened so long ago.
I mean, I think some of the writing is quite fun, like you've kind of gone through, and I guess also just him having this really weird imagined version of it where he says, in my mind there's a braked bed Hovis warmth for the place, and also saying that she taught pickpocketry, she was like a sexy Fagin. So I think some of it is quite funny, but it doesn't really add anything to everything else that's going on in the episode, does it? There's not really like a payoff that feels like it was a massively worthy inclusion.
Similarly, of the suggestion that Tim Rice learns to write rap by having tea and biscuits with the families of deceased American rappers.
Yeah. Is it time for arranged marriages thanks to Ken Bingley and his brother? I mean, I think the standout line for me is the guarantee that comes with your purchase. So it is $69.99, and there is a guarantee that she will be under 9 stone. No such requirement made of the gentleman, but the woman will be under 9 stone.
And it will be a healthy woman.
You get £125.
Thought arranged marriages were just for Asia? How about Glasgow, Southend, or even Anglesey?
Yeah.
This did lead me to wonder whether Anglesey actually has, you know, much like Hebden Bridge in the last episode, whether Anglesey does have a genuine reputation. I found an Anglesey Facebook group which did seem to have a bit of a chip on its shoulder, describing itself as a social group where people are welcome to share events and news about Anglesey in a fair and open manner.
Brilliant.
Also, Ken's guarantee is that the woman will be under 9 stone or 125 pounds. But 125 pounds isn't 9 stone, it's 8 stone 13. So which, Ken, is the guaranteed weight?
Well, is it pounds in money or pounds in weight?
I read it as money, but actually, maybe Adam is right, because that makes more sense.
Yeah. And the money, he's charging £69.99. That's the fee. Mm.
Yeah. That's a Ken guarantee.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that the brother as well, they don't, you know, there's no name. It's just Ken Bingley and his brother. When actually, if his, you know, we know his surname, so it's like, why not name him?
Or at least call it, you know, Bingley Brothers Arranged Marriages, not Ken Bingley's Arranged Marriages. Give him some credit.
It feels like Ken is the acceptable face of the operation, and his brother prefers to lurk in the shadows procuring these small women. So I think there's a few other sort of admissions of Alan's and other people's, including the fact that he only got 3 A-levels and one of them was general studies, but he claimed four, so therefore he claimed to be a more decorated scholar than he is. But he thinks it's okay because John Craven of Newsround fame, in Alan's eyes, became John Braven when he admitted lying about his O-levels, much like in the Me Too movement.
Yeah, inspired by the Me Too movement.
Then I think we hit a real nadir as far as sort of pub joke territory goes. Yeah. Where he says that he was told about someone who ran Liars Anonymous, but when he spoke to him, he denied all knowledge. I thought, this is the sort of joke you see elderly Redditors share on Facebook. I'm not having it in Partridge.
I quite liked it.
I liked I like the way he wraps it up with where you can see the problem. You know, so there's a bit of a levity to it in terms of then. Yeah, I don't know. I think they brought a Partridge sheen to it that I think for me worked.
We're back into his love of James Bond, as he imagines all of the Bonds bowling together. Be careful, Bond. This bowling ball contains a tracking device. What for? Don't know. Love all that stuff.
Can I say, that made me laugh so much. That, I mean, again, on paper, it's not that funny, but the delivery of it is absolutely brilliant.
He really gets tangled in a web of lies here, doesn't he? In that he ends up doing this elaborate lie to sort of protect Adam's secret, to the point where he's now in a dark room with all of his friends named after Bond characters, and he's had to build his own dark room and write dark room on his garage door to really drive the point home.
And the thing with all your friends have the same names as the actors who played James Bond. Well, that can't be right.
Does he say, like, he wrote dark room on the garage in red paint?
On the garage
and then
door,
all the paint ran down. It looked like the gates of hell.
Yeah. We then get a new segment here, don't we?
Oh, Alan's thought for food.
This is very much Alan facts about Alan, isn't it?
Yeah.
But for food.
What I do like is whenever he does, whenever he has like a play on words, he has to give it this really exaggerated, whimsical tone, because it's almost like, he's like, Alan's thought for food. Like, he's scared that you'll think it's a mistake and not wordplay unless he really, like, overemphasizes it.
It's not a particularly interesting thought, I would say. It's essentially a very, very short history of the blancmange, which used to be served with chicken. Absolutely disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting.
I'm not sure if this is a very faint reference to the chicken drizzle cake that the listener made for him and we tried in real life at our Bristol live show.
I tell you what, thank God we're not recording these in person anymore, because this would be the point where Adam brings out a chicken blancmange.
check your inboxes tomorrow morning.
I mean, it like, I guess the thing is, this segment is kind of pointless. It's very short. There's not a huge gag to it, but I think in an APE lens, this is bang on the money for what Alan would be doing on his podcast. Pointless segments that aren't very interesting and there's not much purpose to them. So, this feels very much of a pear tree or an Apache-style production, doesn't it?
So Adam's decided he wants to hold on until Helen dies so that he can keep the secret. But Alan thinks he's hit upon a bombshell theory here that Helen's got short hair, likes hiking and is vegan, so perhaps she's gay as well. But Adam says, no, she's not gay, she's Christian. All of those things still apply. Did anybody have Alan's list of things you can and can't run away from?
Oh, is it? I did have them down, but I remember water pistol.
Yes,
being one of them. I was like, can you run away from a water pistol? I mean, technically, you can. Oh, and a steamroller.
According to Alan, you can run away from a steamroller, a water pistol, an angry old woman, and a swan, but you can't run away from who you are.
And yeah, you can't run away from the secret man inside you. You are a pressure cooker gay.
Yeah, I mean, this is the reveal, isn't it? That effectively, he's having this heart to heart with Adam. And then we reveal that he's leaning into the car window and Helen's sat next to Adam. So
yeah.
Alan's given the entire game away here.
And again, that's another one of those reveals we've talked about where you don't know that there are other people present whilst he's recording until like the kind of like end of a conversation or something.
And then I think we end the episode with the Uber driver that was perhaps over-promised in the audible description of this episode. Having a great chat with his Uber driver from war-torn Syria about civil war, asking, who are you fighting? Which side are you?
Yeah, saying, I wish I knew more about Syria. It's... The driver then at this point starts to sing a song, and you just kind of get these moments of Alan going, oh, lovely. This is lovely, lovely. But this obviously couldn't be further from the truth. And a VO he's doing that thing where a VO fades up and starts to kind of talk over what you're hearing in the background. I didn't really know enough about the song, but the podcast is now dedicated to Mustafa.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? Did anybody clock the actor playing Mustafa? Because I thought I recognised the voice and I didn't
know.
It's Yousef Kakul.
Is it the guy from Home?
Yes, correct. Yousef Kakul.
Sammy. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, also just having a quick look on his television credits. He's also been in Holby City and Doctors. I'm just trying to see whether there's anything else to make a trio of any kind of soap. But I mean, Home is an absolutely brilliant comedy that had two series on Channel 4. Highly recommend that. And he was the lead character in that. He has also been in Man Like Moby, Wurzel Gummidge, Jack Ryan. And some stuff at the Royal Shakespeare Company. So, you know, a varied and storied career there.
Classic. So, yeah, that brings us to the end of these episodes, which I felt personally were a little bit sort of a good narrative push, but a bit thin on the ground jokes-wise, especially the first of these.
I think we've obviously been dangled the carrot of Michael, and that's while listening to this for the first time, in preparation for this, like, you just want to get to that bit, you want to get to the Michael stuff, I think. So I think there's always going to be a little bit of a bias when anything that in a series that has promised to deliver Michael, every time we're not given it or given an update or given anything new really tangible told on to, it's always going to feel like a little bit of a disappointment. But you know, there was a little bit earlier on, but certainly in this last episode they're doing that thing where they dangle it in front of you a little bit, tease it, and then they do an episode where there's no mention of him at all, and there's always going to be a little bit of a disappointment, I think. But it's not going to be the case in the next couple of episodes.
It certainly isn't. So yeah, following today's episodes, New Grandkid and New Friend is arguably the third episode in the new trilogy, Newcastle. And how can you possibly have an episode called Newcastle without heavily featuring Michael? So we will join you next week as we take on episodes 9 and 10 from the Oast House, starting with episode 9, Newcastle. If there's anything you'd like to share with us, questions, comments, or thoughts around anything we've raised today, I feel like that bit at the end of when they have a particularly dark episode of Hollyoaks. If you've been affected by the issues discussed in today's Monkey Tennis, then do get in touch on Instagram at @MonkeyTennisPod, Twitter at @ThePartridgePod, Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. You can email ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. And if you're enjoying our 100% independent podcast, which is now into its 155th episode, and fancy throwing us a couple of coins of appreciation, you can send those in at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha!
Yep, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring. There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little piss, my foot on a spike.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Oh. Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey Tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
Well, this is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.